So we're continuing chapter 26. We started last week, chapter 26. And we are talking about?
Joy.
Very good.
Not happiness.
Not happiness. Because happiness is something that happens. Right. What does that mean? Happiness is something that happens. That if my circumstances line up in such a way that they please me, then I get to be happy. It's very reactive. Joy is the opposite. Joy is I select an attitude and I put my setting on joy, and then I'm able to transcend and rise above my situation. So happiness is more about a reaction to a situation. Joy is proactive. And very important distinction, okay? Because precisely the point here in this chapter is that we're going to learn methods of rising above certain situations that normally cause people sadness. Now, we haven't figured out a way to avoid the pain. The pain is the pain. We spoke about that last week. But we don't have to be sad about the pain. We can be in pain and we can be joyful at the same time. Okay? You can be in pain and be joyful at the same time.
Right, but you can't really be sad and depressed at the same time being joyful.
You can't be sad and joyful, really. Well,
I just read a secular book, Bittersweet.
So, let's keep it simple for now. There actually is a paradoxical way of being joyous and sad at the same, but let's wait till chapter 33 where it talks about that, or 34 rather. Let's keep it simple. For right now, what are we talking about? We're talking about the necessity of joy. Remember, this is very important, the context where this comes up in Tanya. We're not just talking about joy for the sake of joy because we want to be happy, but because, remember, right, to serve Hashem properly, we have to be joyful, because anything that you do joyfully, you do well. And anything that you don't do joyfully, you don't do well. So we need to be in control of our emotions and our mood in order to serve Hashem properly. And we gave the metaphor. Remember the metaphor last week, the beginning of the chapter? Mm-hmm. The two wrestlers, and one was stronger, he should have won, but he emotionally, he was checked out, and so he lost. Okay. So we established last week the importance of joy. Then we began to speak about we can be joyful even when experiencing, God forbid, challenges in the big areas of life, the three categories. Remember the three categories? Bane chayim ezeine. Bane chayim ezeine. So bane means family. Chayim means health. Mezeine means parnasa, money, livelihood. Okay? Those are the three big areas that trouble us. And we said we can be joyful no matter what's going on in those areas of life. And we said, still reviewing, that the key is to embrace that which our sages proclaimed, that just as one must bless God when he does that which is good, we bless Hashem, he who is good and who does good, so too there's another bracha, Baruch Dayan HaEmes, blessed is the one who's the true judge, meaning, I don't see this as good, but he knows better than me. Apparently it is good. So we have a tradition of blessing, meaning expressing gratitude, even when things happen that we didn't want, that we don't want. Okay. Now we just stated that as a statement, as an aphorism of the sages. We didn't explain how to actually get yourself into that mind state. And that's where we left off. Okay? Does this sound familiar? It sounds like where we left off?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is it important to first acknowledge the pain before we thank Hashem?
Is it important to first acknowledge the pain before we thank Hashem?
Acknowledge, feel the pain.
So here's the thing.
Or we're suppressing it.
Here's the thing. You don't need to be told to acknowledge the pain. You automatically acknowledge the pain.
Not if we jump to, oh, this is great, thank you.
Well, that's not, see, here's the thing. The method that we are going to learn does not ask you in any way, shape, or form to deny the reality of your experience. I think because sometimes people have learned methods or they have taught themselves methods that do sort of border on denial. So these healthy approaches to managing pain get a bad rap. So, yeah, I think your question may be arising from having experienced or been exposed to certain attitudes. I think today they call it toxic positivity. That's the fancy word in 2022. But there's no toxic positivity here. Nobody in Tanya is saying that you have to pretend that something isn't real. Not at all. What we're doing is we're gaining a new perspective how to contextualize something, and we can feel differently about it. Doesn't mean we deny that it's true. Of course it's true. And it may also be painful. Pain is an automatic reaction. There's really nothing I can do to manage that. But then as far as cerebrally, how I process it, the narrative that I tell myself about it, all of that is really up to you to decide, and that's what we're doing. We're learning a new way of understanding what we're experiencing. Okay? Fine. So we didn't say how to do it yet. We didn't say any of the practical stuff here. All right. Upirsha b'gemara. I'm continuing now where we left off. Upirsha b'gemara. And in the Gemara, it explains lekabule besimcha, that this means to accept or to receive one's difficulties besimcha, joyfully. Kemei simchas hateva haniglis veniris, just as one accepts and receives, embraces the goodness which is revealed and apparent. That's a very important concept right here. We refer to toiva haniglis veniris, good which is revealed and apparent. Because what we're going to actually do is we're going to present two categories. No longer do we speak about good things and bad things happening. We speak about revealed good things and concealed good things. There's no more why do bad things happen to good people. No. There's, maybe you could ask, why do concealed good things happen to good people? Why do people who are good in a revealed way experience good, which is good in a concealed way? You could ask that question. But there's no more concept of bad things happening. There is that which is good in a readily obvious way and that which is good in a really difficult way to decipher as good. Yeah. Okay. We haven't gotten to this point yet. All we go step by step. You're right. There isn't an order to do this, in order to that. Yeah, of course. Yeah. But, okay. This is many steps. Okay. So, first thing we said is that when one experiences pain or loss or challenges in the areas of life, even the areas of life, and how much more so other areas of life, which are not such big deals to us. But even in the big areas of life, like family issues and health issues and money issues, that we accept these problems just like we accept. What does it mean, accept it? We're okay with it. We say, yeah, okay, no problem. It's like, would you like some chocolate? Sure, I'd love some chocolate. So we accept these things. We welcome it. We affirm it. We say, yes, this is my life. This is really happening. Mm-hmm. Just like when we like what's happening to us. All right. Ki gamzu latoiva. Because this too is for good. And of course we know that expression gamzu latoiva is a famous story about Nochem Ish Gamzu, the Tana, the famous sage. And I won't tell the whole Nochem Ish Gamzu story right now, but that's where the expression comes from, gamzu latoiva, that even things that appear not to be so good, but they work out in unexpected ways. Okay. Rak she'ena niglis v'niris le'ene basar. It's just that this thing is not revealed and apparent to fleshly eyes. So gamzu l'teva, this thing is also good. It doesn't look good. Yeah, I know. It's not the kind of thing that would look good. In fact, it's the kind of thing that would look bad. But it's not bad, it just looks bad. And it's not because you're an idiot, it's because these are things that just don't look good from a mortal, finite, human, limited perspective. Now he explains a little bit more. I'm going slowly, one phrase at a time. Ki. He ma'alma diskasya shalamayla ma'alma disgalya. Because this hidden good is from the hidden worlds, which is higher than the revealed worlds. Okay, what are these worlds? What are these worlds? I'm not going to get into a whole long discussion. We could have an entire year just studying Seder Ishtalshlis about the system of how the infinite creates finite planes of reality. We could speak about the different worlds, but we're not going to do that today. We're just going to speak in general about the idea that every world is another system of reality. Every world, okay, I'll do a little explanation of the idea of worlds. The word world in the Holy Tongue, olam, or olam, is from the etymological root ayin lamed mem, which means to conceal. So a world means a concealment. Why is a world a concealment? It is an interface which hides creator by presenting itself as creation. An olam, a world, is an interface which hides creator by presenting itself as creation. Now there are more transparent worlds where the creator is a little bit more apparent and revealed. Those are what we call spiritual worlds. And then there is the physical world where the creator is all but hidden within creation. And the effect of each of these worlds is compounding. Imagine like layers of translucent curtains on a window until finally the effect is opacity. You have enough translucent curtains until it becomes opaque. The effect is opaque. So we have these worlds which compound the concealment of the creator so that instead of seeing oneness, we see separateness. Instead of seeing the absolute existence of Hashem, we see the fleeting, transitory existence of created beings. And in fact, not only we see it, but we reckon that as much more solid and real than Hashem's existence, which from this perspective becomes sort of like theoretical and abstract. So that's what an olam is. That's what a world is. Now, there are generally, there are many, 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 many worlds, but generally four categories of worlds. We speak about Dalet Olamais, four worlds. Atsilos, I'm going from the highest to the lowest. Atsilos, Bria, Yetzira, Asiya. And within those four worlds, we further can group them or categorize them as the top two and the bottom two. I'm thinking in terms of top and bottom, vertical, a vertical schema. And that's obviously not spatial, because we're not talking about actual top and bottom. But what I mean is top and bottom as far as process. So the top being closer to the raw oneness, the bottom being more of the effect of what we experience here in embodiment. So higher worlds, lower worlds means more revealed worlds and more concealed. Or it depends what you mean, because it's all relative. The higher worlds we call the concealed worlds, and the lower worlds we call the revealed worlds, because we're saying from our perspective. But really, the higher worlds are worlds of more revelation, godly revelation, and the lower worlds are worlds of concealment, godly concealment. But I don't want to confuse you, because what we refer to them as alma discasia, the higher worlds, are concealed. Concealed meaning from us, from our experience of reality when in a state of embodiment. And then the alma discalia, the worlds that are more revealed. Now, you also have to understand another thing, that another way of representing these four worlds is by labeling each of these worlds as a representation, or perhaps the opposite. It is represented by one of the four letters of Hashem's divine name, of the essential name, Yud and He and Vav and He. And again, I can get into a whole explanation why those letters, why the top world of Atzilus is compared to a Yud, and why the world of Bria is compared to a He, and why Yetzira is compared to a Vav, and why Asiya is compared also to a He, and then what's the difference between the top He and the lower He. I'm not going to get into that today. Just understand that we're talking about Yud and He and Vav and He. I don't say the letters consecutively. I punctuate with the and. If we say all the four letters in a row, we just say Yud, K, Vav, K. Instead of pronouncing the He, we say it like K, because it is a divine name. If you say all the letters together, it is a divine name. We refrain from saying divine names. So we have that four-step process, and then we have the top two and the bottom two, the concealed and the revealed. All right. Now let me continue here a little bit. So he just said, Gamzula Taiva, the stuff that hurts, is also good, but it's not from the revealed worlds. It's coming from the concealed worlds. Shehu Vavke, Mishem Avaya Baruch Hu. The revealed stuff is from the lower two letters, Vav and He. The Alma Diskasya, the concealed stuff, Hu Yud Ke, is coming from the top two letters. So far, so good? I mean, it's not that difficult to understand what he's saying here, right? You have a bunch of different stuff happens to us. We subjectively experience it from our perspective as either good or not good. But what we're saying is objectively it's all good, but some of it we're admitting is not in a form that presents itself in a way that a normal person would identify as good. You're not crazy for saying that's bad. You're not crazy at all. Because we do understand that the form in which it's presenting itself down here, the goodness is very concealed. And what we're saying is, well, there are different ways in which stuff materializes down here. Some of it's coming from lofty worlds, and it doesn't translate very well down here. And other stuff has gone through the different translations until it is something that we can perceive with our very limited perspective as good. And that we're saying that the top levels are the Yud and the He, and the bottom levels are the Vav and the hay. And if something happens from the top two worlds, from the yud and the hay, it's good, but you're not going to experience it that way.
From the top two
levels. And then he continues, he says, v'zeu shekosov. This is what it means when it says, Ashrei agever asher tiesrenu ka v'gaymer. Fortunate is the one who is chastised by Yudke. Hashem has many names. Sometimes we refer to Hashem as just the top two letters of his four-letter name. Yud, some, we pronounce it ka, or yud and hey, or Yudke. So why do we say, fortunate is the one? This is a verse from Psalms, King David. Fortunate is the one who is chastised, who's disciplined, rebuked by Yud-Ke. Because if you experience something that feels like discipline and a rebuke, if it feels harsh, I know where it's coming from. Well, everything comes from God, but there are different aspects of God that are more engaged from our perspective at different times under different circumstances. So if something's presenting itself in my life that feels like a rebuke, that feels harsh, then it's coming from the top two letters. It's coming from Yud and K. Yeah?
Okay. Essentially, right, the goal is to have a relationship with Hashem.
Okay.
So the insinuation is that, okay, they're both the same things. They're just matching okay. differently. But we also believe that Hashem, as a creator, knows us and is intimately aware that we are not going to be experiencing
right.
these things the same way.
Right. Right.
So to what we're doing, to equating it, which is essentially what we're doing, it's missing a veracity because it's not equal. So there's Hashem knows we're not going to experience
it. Hashem knows we're not going to experience it as a positive thing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's a good point. Valid point. Let's just continue because I think that will become clear. Okay. V'lochein, therefore, Amru Razal, our sages say, Ki asmechem b'yisurim, those who are joyful in their pain, those who can accept, remember we used the term accept, those who can accept their pain joyfully, not that they went looking for it, they didn't go looking for it. Very important to understand. Accepting means when it was delivered to you. You didn't go looking for it. Only a fool would go look for pain. Mm-hmm. In fact, every morning in the morning blessings, one of the things we say is, Hashem, do not bring me to a Nisayan. Do not test me. Do not make my life difficult. I don't want it. Mm-hmm. But if Hashem sends it, that's a different matter. Mm-hmm. That's a different matter. Hashem sends it. So, therefore, our sages say about those who are joyful with their pain. Again, they're not masochists. They're not going out and looking for this stuff. But it happened. It happened. Aleihem HaKosov Omer, about them, the verse says, V'ayav of Kitzes HaShemesh Bigvurase. His lovers, those who love Hashem, will be like the sun when it goes out in its full force, in its full might. What does that mean? Ki asimcha hi ma'avasa kirvas Hashem yes mikol chayelim hazeh. Because the joy that one has in these painful experiences comes from the love that one has for closeness to Hashem more than his preference for all of the comforts of this world. This is very important to understand. You're telling me that this is a higher good. The thing that looks not good is actually, it is good, it's a higher good. Okay, can I tell you my preference? Can you give me some more lower good, please? Why do I want higher good? So this is a very important part here. He says, it's based on a relationship. It's based on your love of Hashem. Those who love Hashem, so what do they want? They want more Hashem. See, if you would tell me, Hashem could give you experiences that are easy to identify as good, or Hashem could give you experiences that are really hard to identify as good, which kind would you like? You would have to be a fool to say, either to say, well, for sure you'd be a fool to say, give me the hard ones. But you'd also be a fool to say, either way, I don't know, take your pick. If you're asking my preference, no question, okay, I want the easier stuff. However, what if I present it like this? Remember when we said that the concealed stuff is concealed because it's coming from a higher level. And what that means is it's loftier, it's more spiritual. It doesn't translate well down here in this world. Like, I have that problem as a communicator all the time. I'll say, especially with jokes, I'll say jokes that are hilarious to me, and they're not funny for my audience. In fact, maybe it's even upsetting them. So that's my metaphor here for, I can relate to Hashem. Like, that was a good joke. Why does nobody laugh? Okay. The point is, if you don't translate something that your audience can appreciate, don't expect them to be on the same page with you. You didn't translate it. You didn't present it in a way that they could relate to. Okay?
And you could have,
because you're God. And he could have. That's right. But here's the thing. The loftier stuff means it's coming from a deeper place. So think about it like this. There are people with whom I'm very guarded, and my constant thought is, how do I present myself to them that they will have a positive experience of our interaction? And I do that. In fact, I do that for a living. But that is not a real relationship. That's a service I provide. That's not a relationship. There are rare opportunities where I can just talk almost, never exactly quite like I think, but almost like I think. Where I don't have to translate things for people, I can just talk the way that I think, or close to the way that I think. Hashem, when he talks to us, quote unquote, by creating reality, in really lofty spiritual ways, it really doesn't translate well to the experiences of an embodied soul in this world. When he dumbs it down for us, he dumbs it down a bunch of notches, then we're like, oh, Hashem, that was so cool. But when he tells it to us the way that it plays in Atzilus, like, if he says this line in Atzilus, the Netzolim, the emanations up in the world of emanation, they're like, oh, Hashem, that's a good one. Go tell that down on earth. And he says, I told them down on earth, they hated it. It bombed. Totally bombed. In Atzilus, they were loving it. Down here in the physical plane, I told them, and they hated it. They were, what's the old saying? If God lived on earth, all of his windows would be broken.
So how do you build a loving
world? Okay, so here's what we're saying. Sometimes Hashem, not all the time, but sometimes Hashem is going to show you something that he knows is going to be really hard to handle. Mm-hmm. But what he's doing is he's giving you more of the real stuff. Now, I understand from our perspective, don't give me real. I don't need real. Give me the Cliff's Notes. Dumb it down for me. I don't need the real thing.
It's also not working. Well, that's up to us,
no? So what he says here, so follow what he's saying. He's saying, don't look at it as, would you like to have revealed good or concealed good? Because if that's the way that I'm presenting it, there's no question. What kind of fool am I? Of course I want revealed good. He's saying, hold on a second. Two options here. Closeness, or they're both closeness, but let's say a deeper relationship with Hashem or a less deep relationship with Hashem. Now again, I'm not going to go purposely looking for depth in my relationship with Hashem by bringing suffering upon myself, God forbid. But when it presents itself, and I can view it as an opportunity to relate to a deeper aspect of Hashem, And instead of looking at it as, do I want easy to identify good or difficult to identify good, instead I look at it as, am I ready right now? And I didn't look for it, I didn't ask for it, but it's on my lap anyway, so I can either be in denial or I could accept it. Am I ready right now to say, okay, I guess this is what's happening right now. I'm about to have an encounter with a deeper aspect of Hashem.
Can that deeper aspect not feel loving, but feel more like anger, and that's a deep relationship with Hashem?
Well, you have to understand that it's not anger. It's Hashem speaking on a level that's really hard for us to relate to. Yeah, well, if Hashem has a terrible PR department. Hashem's marketing is awful. Nobody makes a bigger Chilul Hashem than Hashem. Because, and I'll tell you, because really, every time Hashem gives someone a paper cut, he's giving the atheists fodder to say there's no justice in the world. So, and somehow, in his infinite wisdom, though, and he is infinitely wise, he does choose for people to have painful experiences. And apparently he knows what he's doing. Hold on. Not yet. Don't get triggered by human suffering. You have to really be mature in order to get through this, because we're halfway in the middle of a concept. You want to sort out the concept here? If having a visceral reaction to human suffering, I need a table. Okay, go ahead. Okay.
We lost the organelles. And what we don't see is the clarity.
Right.
So when we have concealed good, and it is concealed, deeply concealed.
Right.
Our pain and suffering.
Right.
Hashem wants us to work really, really hard, because when we climb the mountain, he will get to see the beauty.
Okay. Let's hold off on that. We're not there yet. Yes, everything you're saying is correct. We're not there yet. Okay. Yeah.
I've learned this concept, and I wonder how it fits into this.
Probably not, and it's going to confuse me. You want to confuse me?
I think it's a positive thing.
There's a lot of positive things. It's just not. Do you understand?
Okay,
hold off. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, hold on a second. Hold on. This is not coffee hour. Okay? I just want to make sure everyone's still following here. Okay, let's just review, make sure we're following. You guys are having fun. I'm not having fun. This is not fun. This is serious. This is not fun. This is serious learning over here. Okay. We're working hard. Okay. Okay, can we regroup here and make sure that we're following the concepts? All right, we started off and we said, you have to be joyful. You have to be, because if you don't serve Hashem with joy, you're not going to serve Him well, and the whole purpose of existing is to serve Hashem. Okay, great, I get it. All right, what do I do if I have problems in life? In the big three categories, money, chayim, mizrein, family, and health, and money. He says, we can deal with it. How are we going to deal with it? Okay. The sages tell us, just like you bless Hashem for delivering the good, you do it also on the bad. And in fact, it's not really bad, it's gamzulatayv, it's also good. In fact, it's not also good, it's the highest good, because there are really levels of the way Hashem communicates with us, higher levels which are concealed, meaning concealed, relatively speaking, from our ability to process, and lower levels which are more revealed, meaning more relatable. Okay, and when something happens that we don't relate to, it's coming from a higher place. Here's the point, and I need you to get this. If you're just asking me, do I want easy or hard? Of course I want easy. But that's not the choice. The choice is, and it's not even a choice anyways, because it's happening anyway. It's happening anyway. But the question is, am I ready to embrace closeness or deeper closeness as opposed to a more shallow relationship? Now, that's a really big point. And he's not, by the way, telling you that you have to have that attitude. He's just explaining it as a fact. He calls them Ayhavav, Hashem's lovers. If you love Hashem, that means that if you had an opportunity to experience a deeper connection with Hashem, that would be something you would value. And then if I were to explain to you, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you, a lot of times our deepest connection to Hashem is experienced through really painful experiences. Do you want to rethink that? And the answer is, well, I wouldn't bring it upon myself. I wouldn't go looking for it. But when it happens, yeah, I guess I can recontextualize it and say, it's not about easy or hard. It's about a deeper level of closeness. So if you don't value a deeper level of closeness, then this method will not work. And I just want to make this very clear, because I don't want to promise you something you're not going to get results from. If you do not value closeness with Hashem over having a comfortable life, this method will not work. So don't come complain and say it didn't work. I'm telling you it won't work. Because this method is telling you, if you appreciate closeness with Hashem, what he calls kirvas elokim li tov, closeness with Hashem is what I consider good. Then, even when that entails greater suffering, you're going to be able to deal with it. Not only deal with it, but to cherish it. But if you don't appreciate an opportunity for greater closeness with Hashem, then obviously this is not going to work for you, because you're going to say, well, what am I getting out of this? It's lose-lose. I'm having pain, and I'm getting something I don't even care about, which is closeness with Hashem. But if you do care about closeness with Hashem, then this method can help. Yeah, okay.
So I just have real life proof.
Yeah.
Of that statement. Because I always dive in for closeness to Hashem. I want to feel close to you. I want to feel safe with you. I want to feel loved by you.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep getting knocked down.
That means you're getting closer.
Hashem is close to the broken heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How can I feel safe?
Because
not live in fear.
The question is, you know, okay. So you're saying, and this is real stuff here. You're saying, I've davened for closeness, and boy, did I get it. And maybe if I would have known what closeness meant, I would have had a different prayer. Okay, but then your follow-up question is, how do I feel safe with that? Okay, so here's the thing. Our security doesn't come from this world. Our security comes from Hashem. Mm-hmm. So how do we determine what is a safe experience? It's not about what's happening. It's about who I'm with. It's about a relationship. So ultimately, I'd rather be going through hell with my beloved than be strolling through the tulips alone. If you trust your beloved. And that's why this whole method is predicated on being a lover of Hashem. This will not work in a transactional relationship with Hashem. If you view Hashem as the big ATM who's supposed to give you prizes, then this method will not work, because he's not giving me prizes, he's giving me electric shocks. But if you view it as a relationship where I'm trying to get more closeness, so if I can say to myself, you know what? The experience itself is not what I want. But apparently, I asked for closeness. I asked for closeness. This is what closeness is. This is what closeness is. Now, is it possible to attain closeness with Hashem having a comfortable life? I'm sure it is. You know the reality that I've seen? That the most profoundly spiritual people I've ever known, without exception, have always gone through serious pain. Now, it doesn't mean every aspect of their life was a living hell, but it means they did experience real challenges. But again, what does safe mean? Does safe mean safe to know that I'm only going to get certain experiences, or safe to know that my beloved is always there no matter what the experience?
So are we being tested?
Oh, the only thing
Yeah, but we're not viewing this as a test. This is not so much about being tested. There is a concept of being tested, that that's not really what we're speaking about here.
Rabbi, when we say the song now, Psalm 27.
Yeah, L'David HaShemeri, yeah.
And we say, even though my mother and my father have abandoned me,
yeah.
They will never abandon me.
Yeah.
That's what safety is.
Yeah.
He's always there for you.
But what does it mean he's always there for you? You have to really clarify that, because if you think he's there for you as a butler, as a valet, he's really not doing what you want. I told you to give me a comfortable life. And look, everywhere I turn, I'm experiencing more challenges. Why aren't you doing your job, Hashem? But if you look at it as closeness, if you look at it as a real bond, where I've gone through so much. I've gone through things I didn't think I could go through. And in going through those things, I discovered more of who I am. I discovered more of what you can't learn from books. So we call that closeness with Hashem. Now, obviously, we're not going out and looking for these experiences or manufacturing these experiences. Let's continue, because we're, thank you. You carry this around?
Yeah.
Bottle of water?
Just in case.
Just in case, yeah, I definitely need a bottle of water right now. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam, shakram lanu v'lo lanu. Okay. Ki asimcha, yeah, let's back up. Ki asimchi ma'avase kirvas Hashem yesu mikol chayilim hazeh. We said that line, I'm saying it again. The joy is the joy that comes from loving Hashem and closeness with Hashem more than the comforts of this world. Ki dechsiv, like it says, ki tev chastecha mechayim v'gemer, your kindness is better than life. What does that mean, your kindness is better than life? It's calling it kindness. You know what it's calling kindness right now? It's calling painful experiences kindness. This is very difficult to wrap our minds around. Kindness doesn't mean the typical kindness where an experience is readily, obviously good. Kindness means Hashem makes himself available for a deeper relationship. And that when it happens, we say, Hashem, I appreciate the deeper relationship more than I appreciate having an easy life. This is really adult stuff here. This is very grown-up stuff. But going back to your original question about denial, like this is the opposite of a denial. It's saying, I know what this is. I know how it feels. I know what it looks like. In fact, not only I know what it looks like, from an embodied perspective, I can tell you what it is. It's pain and suffering. And yet, if I can try to think on a more infinite scale, I can appreciate that these intense experiences, and that's what I'll call them, intense experiences, are what lead me to a deeper connection with Hashem.
But it's paradoxical, because what we're saying is the deeper relationship with Hashem.
Yeah.
But the pain and suffering is creating a concealment of God that you feel very far from Him. Essentially what she said.
It depends what you do with it.
Meaning, let's say somebody is having something in all three. Right? Forget we're saying one. Mm-hmm. Let's say someone is sick and it has family issues and doesn't have money, right? And they're like, I want to be close to you. I appreciate, I value this relationship. I understand, and you've been saying, and I appreciate that you have chosen me to do this.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm trying to come close to you, and you just keep concealing yourself.
Yeah. Well, again, you're telling Hashem he's concealing himself because he's not behaving the way you want him to behave.
You want a specific outcome. And unless that outcome comes from him, then you think there's concealment.
Right, but I'm talking about a person that's experiencing like a
who's going through hell, who's right.
being tortured.
Yes, that's right. what we're talking about. Yes, I'm not shying away from it.
But that person is in a guf, right?
Yes.
Yes,
and Hashem knows exactly how it feels. Hashem's not oblivious.
And he still believes that from that, that can create a closeness.
Yeah.
And to feel joy.
You know,
right.
And to feel joy because we realize that this experience creates more closeness.
But that, I feel like, is a little bit in our generation, a little bit of a setup for
like a major process.
But then it's a
major
process. Well,
you think in where we are is that
you look, you can question Hashem's judgment and say, Hashem, don't you know our generation? We're not up to this. We can't handle this. And maybe in previous generations, going through hell made people more spiritual. Mm-hmm. In our generation, you're just going to break us. Yeah. And if I could just guess Hashem's response, I think Hashem's response is, what do you think I'm doing? What do you think I'm doing? I'm taking it as easy on you as I can.
I mean, that's a little scary.
Well,
no, I don't mean to, I'm saying, like, you know where we are, you know.
You know, our lives are pretty good.
Yeah.
There's an expression, first world problems, for a reason. And I don't want to say that everyone in our comfortable world today has an easy life and every problem they have is first world problems, because we know that there are horrific problems, truly horrific problems. And even on a historical scale, something that would in any generation be considered horrific. And yet, what do you want to say?
We have to be aware that there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't think it's just about a bomb or a crisis. It's
that you asked a specific question, which was,
this is what's happening.
Your specific question, I'm trying to answer the question that I thought you asked, which is, if you look at the world, it seems to be proof that Hashem is not judging well what we can handle.
That wasn't what I was
saying. It's not what you're saying. Okay, fine. So I misunderstood.
What I was asking was how, if we're trying to reach people that are in pain, that are what I felt from what you were saying was that we're in a, that there's, you know, we're not like the way everybody says. We're not how it used to be. And we're going to
right.
how the Jews used to live, right? And I'm trying to.
Okay, so I'll take it back.
It's in a place of where people are struggling with things.
Okay.
We're not struggling with running water.
So I take it back. It wasn't helpful. It wasn't helpful to say that. Let me back up. Your question was about people who are not being brought closer to Hashem. They're experiencing the very opposite. Okay. So my first response is, if you're in pain right now, my response would be, don't talk to me about Tanya. Don't talk to me about faith. I feel bad. I'm sorry. I have compassion. I don't know. Why does Hashem do these things? How can Hashem keep doing these things to people and expecting it's going to continue working out? That's my only response. That's my response. No other response. Now, if everybody who's not in acute crisis leaves the room, and by not in acute crisis means maybe even your crisis was half an hour ago, and says, okay, now let's learn, I would say, okay, you want to learn? All right, let's learn. Before everyone runs away, let me just tell you the bottom line. Okay, forget everything we learned today. But the bottom line is like this. I said this before, I just want to say it again, because this is all I want you to take away from me. This is all I want you to remember me saying. This is all I want to be associated with. I don't want to be associated with anything else that I said today. If somebody is going through hell, you do not quote chapter 26 of Tanya at them. You do not be like Job's friends. It's actually a halacha in Shulchan Aruch. It says that Job's friends came, they philosophized with him when he was going through anguish. And it actually says you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to give somebody theological explanations for what they're going through. It's not helpful. It's actually not even allowed. So we don't do that, okay? This is just something that people who want to have a tool for dealing with this stuff, this is a way of learning it, but this is not the way I want you to respond to human suffering. This is not the way I want you to, this is not the reaction that I want you to have. this is a tool, a very specific tool for people to use when they're ready to use it at their own comfort level. And that's it. That's what I want everyone to understand. Yeah? Yeah.
We're not skipping it, right?
She's amazing. She's incredible. But Rabbi, I think it's also just for yourself. You're not teaching us what to do for others.
No.
It's not a method.
Okay.